This is Audible.
Day Street Books and Harper Audio present
The Hidden Power of Fucking Up.
Written and read by the Try Guys.
Keith Habersberger.
Ned Fulmer.
Zach Kornfeld.
And Eugene Lee Yang.
Chapter 1. Our Philosophy. And Why Yoda is Bullshit.
We had to try. The waves were much higher and far more frightening than they were supposed to be.
A storm was brewing, and angry clouds gathered on the horizon, inching closer as the turbulent waves thrashed our dingy life raft like a rag doll.
Having already pulled myself onto the raft, Ned and I lifted Zach's tiny, tiny little body from the icy water.
Ooh, it's so cold.
Then all three of us hoisted Keith's much larger body up.
Hey, get up here.
I'm so big.
For a moment, it seemed like the crisis was over. And then Keith started vomiting.
Oh, no.
Keith, not in the audio booth. Come on. Keith, we have to film in here all day. Every video has a plan, but this one wasn't going according to ours.
Now, I am a survival show aficionado, so I was supposed to save the day, uniting our fractured family and swooping in during the video's climax to lead our rescue.
Yay!
Yay! But that was then, this is now, and Keith was lost to us.
With each wave, Keith fell deeper and deeper into an abyss of nausea.
As the remaining three of us devised a new plan, Keith continued to heave into the water. The plan to film for 6 hours was dashed. We needed to get this video done and get our asses back to shore.
That's when we saw the shark.
Oh.
We saw a shark.
The more Keith hurled, the more fish gathered to eat it, like chum. Apologies for that image.
Gross.
First came the bigger fish, and then the shark. Two of them, actually. Both circling curiously beneath us, and occasionally piercing the water's surface to see what all the commotion was about.
With dorsal fins closing in on our boat, suddenly, our death and dismemberment insurance paperwork felt very relevant. The plan had totally gone to shit. But we were still there, and our video wasn't about to shoot itself. With two GoPros and some shitty microphones taped to our chests, we rushed to complete filming before Keith ran out of bodily fluids and the sharks decided to fill the voids in their own empty stomachs. Then, I stabbed the bottom of the raft with a big-ass knife, flooding it, and sunk it into the bottom of the ocean beneath us. Totally and completely fucking everything up?
All in a day's work!
In case it wasn't obvious, we're the Try Guys, the lovable quartet best known for our videos in which we, well, try things. From zapping our bellies to simulate the pains of childbirth, to sparring with professional UFC fighters. And whose stupid idea was that? We've done everything in our power to push, nay, annihilate our comfort zones and better understand the people and world around us. Now, we're here to pay it forward. Our latest try? This book you're holding, or listening to if you're an audiophile. But this book is not about succeeding, and it's certainly not about perfection. It's a book about living, about pushing boundaries, and about challenging yourself to reach heights once thought to be impossible. This is a book about embracing failure and riding it on a bumpy but ultimately upward trajectory. Because if our crazy journey has taught us anything, it's that success isn't all it's cracked up to be. In fact, the only way to truly experience all the wonderful, bizarre, satisfying, life-changing, mind-melting, Instagram doesn't even do it justice things this world has to offer is to fail. In the audio that follows, we're going to share a collection of philosophies that have guided us through making videos and, somewhere along the way, transformed us into better people. We'll also be sharing some stories from our past for the first time ever, carefully handpicked to showcase just how much we've fucked up on our way to becoming the mostly well-adjusted gentleman you see before you today. Together, we'll all become the best versions of ourselves.
Identifying your insecurities is the first step to self-improvement. Listen, it's okay to not be cool. Believe it or not, we're not cool either. See rest of book. But stick with us here. Not being cool is what makes you cool. Where most self-help books are going to teach you how to be someone else, we're going to teach you how to embrace who you already are. And then we're going to lovingly knock you right out of your comfort zone. Together, we'll reassemble ourselves with the full potential we've always possessed. Watch out, world, because sky's the limit, and even then, we can go further. For most of our young lives, we have zero responsibilities and develop amazing habits like not exercising, eating like crap, never cleaning up after ourselves, and procrastinating whenever given the opportunity. Read, always. And then one day, bam, you wake up and realize your friends have all replaced their movie posters with framed art, the government is asking you to pay something called taxes, and you're just expected to know how to cook without burning the house down? But how though? When did everyone learn how to live? Did we all miss some clandestine meeting where everyone discovered the secrets of the universe? If you feel this way, you're not alone. We all do. And it might just get worse before it gets better. Welcome to life. You're going to fail.
A brief history of trying. Everything amazing ever created or accomplished by mankind was forged not via instant greatness, but rather by complete and total failure. Throughout this book, we will be sharing some famous, infamous, and downright silly examples of tries throughout history. Hey, if these people never attempted anything scary, we wouldn't be talking about them, would we? For example, at 15, Albert Einstein dropped out of school. A year later, he applied to another school but failed the entrance exam. After that, he'd only go on to develop the theory of relativity and be named Time's Person of the Century. Show off.
We believe failure is the most powerful tool in your arsenal to grow and change and learn. Failure is the building block of everything you want to achieve in life. If try new things is something we've been told since elementary school, we invite you to fail on purpose. Do you remember the more you know, those public service announcements that taught you about the dangers of crack cocaine or dry drowning? We try to live by the opposite credo. The less you know. You see, the more you think you know, the less you want to learn. And learning leads to trying. Trying leads to failing, and failing leads to growth. So anytime we think we know it all, we just try to step back and remind ourselves, we're idiots. Trust us, this is good advice. The fear of failure is something we've all internalized over the years, and it's something we all need to unlearn. Think about how debilitating it is to take standardized tests, or audition for a school musical, or tell your crush how you feel. You aren't afraid of the action itself. You're afraid of not doing well, of being vulnerable. That's why it's even scarier when you're looking at that cast list, or when you finally get a text back. For a moment, you're powerless to the whims of the world. But we move past it. And when failure motivates us to do better, that's when we really succeed. It's only when failure scares us away from trying again that we've truly been beaten. We have to work to change our perspective. Failure is a step forward, not a step back.
It's helpful to remember that some of the greatest writers, thinkers, athletes, and musicians of our day are not special in any way whatsoever, except that they learned how to fail and get back up again. No one is born great. Have you seen babies? They can't even hold pencils, those dummies. Greatness isn't something ordained, it's something you work your ass off for, despite failing over and over again. Listen, we love Yoda. He's inspirational, he's green, he's like a woke Kermit the Frog. But Yoda's most famous advice was,
"Do or do not, there is no try."
Sorry, but this is complete and total BS. As is the idea that Luke can become a Jedi Master after only training for a few days, but that's another story. Trying is everything. You can't do without try. You'll never get anywhere without try. No wonder that dude lived alone in a swamp. That is what this book is about. Trying as a form of succeeding, so that you never end up living alone in a swamp like that bastard Yoda. Wait, who the hell are we? Why are you listening to us in the first place? Well, we are experts in trying. I mean, it's right there in our name. But, spoiler alert, we weren't always the Try Guys. We didn't emerge from the womb as fully formed viral sensations. That would have been painful for our mothers. In fact, becoming the tour de forces, or is it tours de force, on the internet we are today took a lot of time, a lot of hard work, and the appropriate amount of luck. Before we were the Try Guys, we were just, well, guys with a lowercase g. We're so excited to meet you. This is our story.
Keith Habersberger, Clown Prince of Tennessee. Howdy, listeners. This probably sounds weird to say, and I've never really told this to the other guys, but growing up in Tennessee, I was really blessed to have people be very supportive of me, to the point where teachers, mentors, and friends pulled me aside very seriously to tell me that they thought I'd be famous someday. Now, that is a very weird thing to be told as a kid, but of course, I loved hearing it. Nobody knew exactly what they thought I would be famous for, of course. They just felt I had this unique ability to connect with people and make them laugh. And who doesn't love a good ego stroking at the age of 6? They were right, too. I really wanted to be famous. The thing is, I always hated being bored. When I get bored, I make stuff. At 10, I wanted to have a mini golf birthday party. But the closest mini golf place was over an hour away, and my parents said, "Why don't you just figure out a way to have it at home?" By the next day, I had come up with a plan to build a 9-hole miniature golf course in the woods behind our house. I spent 2 weeks buying old putters and golf balls from thrift stores, gathering old bricks and rocks from the woods to make barriers and obstacles, and even getting some AstroTurf from Home Depot to lay down on a few of the holes. I couldn't afford enough for all of the holes. I was 10. I made a hole entirely from moss. I even had a hole that had a ball goes in the hole and then through a pipe to another part of the hole thing. It was super cool. Then, my birthday came, and it thunderstormed the whole day and the party was canceled. It was one of my first lessons that making the product can be more fun than the product itself. Some people learn that with sandcastles. I learned it with a 9-hole miniature golf course. I'm a little weird. As I got older, I did stints as a juggler, a unicycler, a parody musician, a competitive Dance Dance Revolution player, an award-winning French hornist, a collegiate national champion improviser, touring performer, voiceover artist, and finally, digital video producer. In my early 20s, fame became much less of my goal. It was replaced with, I want to have fun and find the fun in everything that I do. I also had a very firm belief in the philosophy of improv, which is yes and. It's the idea that when someone presents information to you, you should accept it and then add to it. So in life, when somebody wanted my help with something, I said, yes, and what else do you need help with? Pretty much every job I had led to my next job because of my positive attitude and my desire to learn everything I could while I was there. I made connections, gained skills, and then got opportunities for something new. Somehow, in 4 years, I went from performing in front of college students on a stage to performing in front of mostly college students on videos on their phones. Now, I couldn't have planned out that journey in my 5-year plan. Do colleges still make you do that? I don't know. My point is that none of us set out to become the Try Guys. We all ended up here because we said yes to the sometimes random opportunities that led to this. And it isn't the end game for us. It's just the most recent door we've opened, and hopefully we'll just never stop moving through them. Now we are famous, I guess, and I'm proud that four of us are famous for literally saying yes to so many opportunities. Sometimes people ask if it's annoying to get recognized, and I tend to respond with, it's a great thing to have a lot of people like you. I'd be much more annoyed if I was famous because people hated me. So I'm glad that we can make people happy with our videos. And I'm thrilled that one of the doors I opened led me to Ned, Eugene, and Zach.
Keith's most epic fail.
My most epic fail would probably be the Try Guys baked bread without a recipe. I was excited to finally have the upper hand in a competitive Try Guys video. All these years of coming in third or fourth with Zach had finally paid off, and I, the chef of the group, would prevail. Except that I didn't make good bread. None of us did, really, probably because we didn't know what we were doing. Eugene, who was having the most fun, made the judges' most tolerable bread, and I felt totally defeated and upset that I didn't win. I was so miserable because I only cared about winning. But by only caring about winning, I wasn't really honoring the try to begin with. I wasn't having fun and appreciating baking. By caring so much about the victory, I had already lost. I wasn't entering into this try with the idea that I was going to learn and find an appreciation for baking. I wasn't using our own philosophy. In my post thoughts for the video, I was just angry. I totally lost sight of what mattered and what our audience would learn from our experience. The other guys were like, Keith, you have to say something positive. We can't use any of this rant, but I just couldn't get past it on the day of. And now when I look back, I'm much more embarrassed about my behavior than I am about my totally failed bread. Funnily enough, though, I still learned some things about baking from this shoot. I couldn't see past my anger to articulate them in the moment. But even though this was my biggest failure, I still learned how not to do an egg wash.
Ned Fulmer, Renaissance Man. I've always been both an artist and a scientist. As a kid, I designed my own model rockets, but also directed my own stop-motion Lego movies. In high school, I was both president of the drama club as well as the AutoCAD designer for the robotics team. I was equal parts mathlete and comedian. After I graduated from Yale... Guys, go away! This is my section! Okay? Anyway, after Yale, I worked as an R&D chemist at a renewable fuels lab in Chicago for a good part of my 20s. But I soon found myself at an inflection point. It was steady work, if a bit boring at times, but to advance in my field of science stuff, that's the technical term, I would have to go to grad school for 7 years to get a PhD, or more likely pivot to energy consulting and get an MBA. But as I was applying to a consulting job that would move me to the suburbs of Boston, a little voice told me I was making a mistake. Was I giving up my dreams? You see, while I was doing science stuff by day, by night I was fulfilling my passion of performing comedy. I had been steadily working my way into theaters that I admired in Chicago. I performed on a weekly house improv team at the I.O. Theater. I had won some awards with my sketch group and put up shows at Second City. I had even auditioned for Saturday Night Live and done solo character acts. And for all this glamour and success and laughs, damn it, I had gotten paid a grand total of $12.70. I used that to buy a burrito. With guacamole. The thing is, the Chicago comedy and improv scene is absolutely incredible. I wouldn't trade those early years of doing midnight shows and getting on stage for 5, 6, 7 times a week for the world. I will absolutely treasure the training, the community, and the friends I made for life. But it is very hard to make a living doing comedy there. There are a handful of top-tier jobs at Second City, some touring work, and the occasional commercial or TV show. In order to advance, most people move to either New York or Los Angeles. I'd always wanted to be a TV writer and actor, so L.A. was my best bet. But I had neither a job nor any clue how to make that happen. I was at a crossroads. Do I risk everything and move to L.A., hoping it all works out? Or do I apply to grad school? Do I double down on my dreams or accept the fact that not everyone makes it? Do I pursue scripts or spreadsheets? I soon realized that I would always regret it if I didn't try taking a shot at L.A. Grad school would still be there in 2 years. As would Los Angeles, now that I think about it, but whatever, it's fine. And between my network in the comedy scene in Chicago and my network from Yale, I figured that I might be able to scrounge together a job in entertainment when I made it out west. Once I got to L.A., one of those contacts, a very successful TV writer named Dave Getch, gave me the best advice I never knew I needed. Forget TV. Get involved in digital media instead. Make YouTube videos. Make anything. TV will follow. But while you're young, don't spend your time getting coffee for people. Spend your time making things. So, I started a YouTube channel and made a bunch of parody music videos, celebrity impressions, and sketches with wacky characters I created. I filmed a whole bunch of stuff, and well, most of it was bad. But some of it was kind of okay. I submitted my kind of okay stuff along with an application for a BuzzFeed internship, and I got it. At BuzzFeed, I found a really close community of collaborators doing like-minded things. And the best part about digital media? Spreadsheets! I had found a way to combine my two passions. You see, on the internet, there is immediate feedback. Every click is a data point. And by studying which of my content got the most clicks, I found this amazing way to mix creativity with data. I was hooked. Plus, I met three other guys at BuzzFeed who would eventually become my best friends.
Ned's most epic fail.
My biggest failure in Try Guys history was the video Ned Tries Famous Soccer Trick Shots, in which I tried to emulate trick shot legends and personal heroes Dude Perfect. But unlike Dude Perfect, who only shows the successes set to pump up music, I wanted to show all of the failed attempts that led to one successful shot. Now, I'm by no means a soccer superstar. Since breaking my leg in high school, more on that in the next chapter, I've been playing much more defense and much less offense. So I wasn't sure if the video was even gonna work. I was out on this soccer field by myself on a random Tuesday morning. It was hot. I was sweating. I spent the first hour just pumping up 30 balls. Then I got to trying the trick shots. It was hard. Way harder than I'd imagined. I tried doing an around the world, where you scoop your foot around the ball in the air. No dice. Next, I tried to kick the ball into a basketball hoop. Not even close. Then, I tried to hit a bowling pin from long range. No. Just no. Finally, all I had left to try was a banana kick, aka the bend it like Beckham, where you curve the ball around an obstacle and score a goal. I've always dreamed of lining up to take a free kick in a big game and curving a perfect ball around a wall of defenders right into the corner of the goal. I tried this kick for hours. The ball soared over the goal, careened out of bounds, everywhere but the net. I must have said to the camera, "Okay, this is my final try," about 20 times. But eventually, I did it! On the 67th take. You'd think this was a tale about perseverance, and to a certain extent it is, but when I finally put the video online, it completely flopped. It was one of our least viewed videos of the season. Turns out that Dude Perfect is Dude Perfect for a reason. Nobody wanted to see all of my misses. But as you'll learn in this book, embracing your misses is half the battle.
Zach Kornfeld, basically Spielberg. I've wanted to tell stories my entire life. It all dates back to early childhood depression. More on that later in the book. I bet you can't wait. Or maybe it just stems from the fact that I needed some sort of after-school activity so I wasn't sitting on my ass all day and watching Dragon Ball Z. I dabbled in painting, music, even took some comic book drawing classes. I started and stopped a dozen novels without ever getting past the first chapter. Here's hoping I do better with this book. In middle school, I wrote the world's worst movie screenplay, an ensemble comedy about a group of stock caricatures getting shipwrecked on an island that for some reason turns into a high-concept action movie. I don't really remember the fine details, but the mafia was involved, something to do with smuggling drugs. But the real game changer came when I was 10 years old, and LEGO released the LEGO Studios Movie Maker Kit. It was a full production kit, complete with sets, a camera, and rudimentary editing software, all endorsed by Steven Spielberg himself. It even came with a tiny Steven Spielberg Lego man that I still own and cherish to this day. The idea was to create stop-motion movies using your Legos, but after a few videos, I realized I could broaden it to the rest of my bedroom, where inevitably I cast my stuffed animals in instant classics such as The Bear Witch Project and Raiders of the Lost Bark. I begged for a cheap camcorder for my next birthday, and from there, I was off and running. Making movies became my passion, and that passion grew into an obsession. While other kids were running around outside and chasing each other with sticks, I was sitting in my parents' basement learning iMovie and Photoshop. For those unaware, age 13 is a big deal for Jews. It's bar mitzvah time, baby! I grew up in a town just north of New York City called Scarsdale, with a large and in-charge Jewish population, which meant for a year and a half I attended 1 to 3 bar mitzvahs every weekend. During just about every bar mitzvah, they make you sit down for these painfully slow and boring photo montages of the kid's life set to the world's cheesiest music. Slow fades between photos with minor motion, some James Taylor playing in the background. A total snooze fest. I sat twitching in my seat during those first few bar mitzvahs and thought to myself, I can do better. And so I did. I quickly became the most in-demand bar mitzvah editor in all of Westchester County, thanks to my competitive rates and way above average product. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say I totally reinvented the genre, but I sure as shit added some pizzazz. Revolutionary moves like actually cutting to the beat of the music and pacing the damn things up. Not going to lie though, the bar was pretty low. And what's better, it meant that I never had to get a real job all throughout high school. I just got to keep practicing editing and having fun behind a computer. My passion became my job, and I was justified in spending all my time on it. When I wasn't editing sappy montages and teddy bear opuses, I was working on that god-awful screenplay. I was so proud of what I had written that I asked my parents if they knew anyone in Hollywood. This thing was gold, I thought. And surely, if Paramount would just read it, I'd be the hottest young writer on the scene. Sure enough, my father's old buddy Rick was a working movie producer, and in the world's kindest gesture, he agreed to read a 13-year-old's 110-page script. Realistically, he got his poor assistant to read it, but hey, whatever it takes. Rick taught me two incredibly important lessons that still stick with me to this day. First, you get one favor from anyone in Hollywood, so choose wisely. He considered reading the script a freebie, but the next time I needed something, I'd better make sure it was good. And second, you're only as good as your life experiences. Rick's advice was less about the script and more about how you approach the world. Wanting to be creative from a young age is fantastic, but you need to live to have stories to tell. I was spending so much time locked in a basement attempting to hone my craft that I had entirely neglected the most important ingredient of storytelling, cultivating knowledge and experiences to draw from. I've tried my best since then to really take that message to heart, to say yes to everything life throws my way, to remain open to new experiences, and to always explore the unknown. It's made me a better storyteller, and it's certainly made me a better person. I hope. I carried that school of thought with me through college and when I entered a new job at BuzzFeed. There, I was able to marry my absurd passion for creating with the advice of going out and living as much as possible. Oh, and another thing happened during those early days at BuzzFeed. I met the three ding-dongs with whom I'm writing this book. Zach's Most Epic Fail. This book is about how important it is to confront failure. But that doesn't mean it's always easy. Through prosthetics and makeup, we were transformed into bald men for the Try Guys Go Bald. What was meant to be a fun exploration of a common male insecurity just so happened to be the absolute worst thing for my self-esteem. For years, I've tried to ignore that my hairline is receding. Anytime I see photos where it's clear my hair is thinning, a tiny bomb explodes inside my heart. It's the one physical trait about myself I truly, deeply despise, and facing it head on, zing, proved more emotionally draining than I'd expected. A team of talented makeup artists came in, covered me in a bald cap, and blended the lines. Adding insult to injury, Ned and I were outfitted with the Friar Tuck look, a half moon of hair tracing the back of our heads. Everywhere I went that day, I was met with shocked gasps, laughs, and stares. It was not a fun day. But in the long run, the experience has forced me to confront my relationship with my hair. It was a turning point in allowing me to accept that this is something that's really happening, and ignoring the problem isn't about to just make it go away. I'm not going to tell you that you just need to accept everything about yourself. My hair is something that makes me feel bad, and so I've taken steps to do something about it. But I am going to tell you that addressing things is better than repressing them. I had to confront my nightmare in order to get out of it. I came in with fears that bald Zach would look like this weird baby turtle instead of the bald heartthrobs Dwayne Johnson, Bruce Willis, or Vin Diesel. I can confirm that I definitely don't look like any of those guys, but ultimately, if I lose my hair, it's not going to be the end of me. I'll adjust, I'll adapt. Maybe I'll become an underground street racer / international superhero. That's a Vin Diesel reference. Who knows? Maybe by the time you read this, I'll have gotten fed up and just shaved it all off.
Eugene Lee Yang, Black Sheep. Fish out of water. Black sheep. Ugly duckling. Zoological idioms abound, but I will always be the friend who operates from a bizarre outsider's perspective. Although some may call my attitude somewhere between an unusual form of existential nihilism and darkly comic extreme self-awareness, I choose to label myself as defiantly unlabelable. My journey has been fraught with emotional pitfalls, deep physiological trauma, and cruel, constant reinvention, much of which you'll be reading about in later chapters. In short, I'm the last person who anyone would have expected to end up as a digital viral star. The Try Guys were the last three characters I would have ever imagined becoming best friends with, yet here we are. I was born and raised in Central Texas, where my parents, Korean immigrants, settled during the 1980s. My ancestors survived Japanese occupation and a civil war to relocate to, of all places, the conservative American South, where rampant racism was accepted as a daily norm. My childhood was informed entirely by feeling, looking, and lamenting my differences, and I was a charged, noxious bundle of extreme anxiety and self-loathing. I thought the world was a deadening, terrible hellhole from which there was no escape besides my myriad creative outlets, which included writing, drawing, theater, choir, dance, and music. My family shares a rebellious streak. My parents divorced, which was rare for a religious East Asian family. Both of my sisters spoke their minds to the umpteenth degree, bucking any submissive stereotype. I, with no hope of becoming a lawyer, doctor, or engineer, the holy Asian trifecta, retreated into my own imagination. Filmmaking, as a wise middle school teacher would fatefully inform me, seemed to be a perfect career fit, and I set my sights on the University of Southern California's film school, where I was ultimately accepted. Compounding my already tortured racial identity complex was the stark realization, early on in puberty, that I was queer, which, for an ugly duckling who already was compromised by his looks, was like getting the cruelest cherry atop a shit cake. I was stunted in ways I couldn't healthily exercise, and did not feel comfortable in my own skin, sexually and ethnically. So much of my self-perception was influenced by my otherness. I retreated further into artistic expression, unable to truly deal with my identity crisis until I was well into adulthood. My online work, especially with the Try Guys, actually helped my acceptance and self-esteem immensely. After college, and after years of working in the industry as an edgy, furious music video and commercial director, I happened upon a job in digital video, both behind and in front of the camera, by total chance. It would turn out to be a monumental shift in my dreary, rebellious life. There's a grand, almost depraved irony in how the international audience, billions over, were introduced to me. Charming, self-assured, and alternative, but palatably so. At BuzzFeed, I stretched my acting capabilities and performed the more relatable side of my personality as part of our constant testing to reach wider audiences. Shockingly, it worked. Viewers responded to my dryness, diluted apathy, sharp wit, controlled rage, coy inappropriateness, nonconformity light, and brassy self-esteem. A willful need to be a strong minority figure. Many people found my point of view to be akin to theirs, especially when cast in direct contrast with the other Try Guys. And in a way I never dreamt possible, I suddenly found myself representing people of color, the LGBT community, and those who felt different. I, the bullied weirdo, was the internet's version of Homecoming King. It was, and still is, utterly confounding to me. I have become accustomed to this new path in life, working on my voice from the side of the light as opposed to the darkness. My apathy, rage, and nonconformist stances haven't thinned so much as they've evolved to express themselves in smarter, more effective ways. My work with the Try Guys, the unlikeliest of best friends, has consequently made me into a happier person. Eugene's most epic fail. When the Try Guys were asked to host the 2018 Streamy Awards, the digital Oscars, so to speak, we were thrilled by the opportunity to brainstorm and execute on multiple packages for the live show. On top of the extreme exhaustion we were facing, with many sleepless nights preparing, I had decided to visually represent the LGBT community by hosting the show in full drag. Because I am a longtime lover of the art form, the opportunity to focus my endeavors through something as wondrous, challenging, and transformative as drag was huge for me. But by the time the countdown to the live stream began, I was absolutely wiped from the 5 hours of makeup and latex assembly before we had even hit the stage. I couldn't pee, eat, drink, or sit for half the day, and since I was already physically drained, I found myself uncharacteristically out of gas when the spotlight hit. This fantastic reveal and moment we had planned so meticulously, where I would ravage the stage with my lip sync and dance moves, was devastated by my complete lack of stamina, and compounded with a leg injury I had hidden from our team that occurred days before. A defeated, pained, an uninspired version of myself performed and hosted that night. I was, for lack of a better word, a drag zombie. However, after admitting all this to the others days later, they were stunned to hear that I was experiencing any trouble at all. They, and the audience, thought I was excellent. And there's a good chance that much of my supposed failure was due to my own impossibly high standards. There are many listeners who could probably relate to this type of defeat, one that starts and ends entirely within your own hypercritical mind. Perhaps I'm too hard on myself, but hosting that night felt like my greatest failure, not only as a Try Guy, but also as a representative of queer culture who desperately wanted to be a shining example for young viewers. However, I did learn a lot of valuable things about my insecurities, and the grueling, unseen work involved in drag culture along the way. A visit to the West Hollywood bars the following week proved that strangers who had seen the show were impressed, if not moved, that I was so obviously there to uplift our community, zombified or not. As my drag mother Mayhem Miller told me, "If you feel like you failed, don't worry, we've all been there. You'll slay next time." And that's the guiding philosophy of the Try Guys. No matter how hard we fall, or how tough a misstep it may be, it's all about how you get back in your heels and try again.
Stars are born. In early 2014, the four of us joined BuzzFeed's fledgling video division in Los Angeles, which at the time was about a year and a half old and just starting to find its footing. There were under 20 video employees, mostly young and all full of energy and zeal. We were hired first as interns, but then full-time as junior producers with the goal of producing shareable viral videos. It was the early days of social content, and every day a group of passionate creators came in to test assumptions and try their hand at cracking viral formats. Some videos hit, and others were phenomenal disasters, but every video was a new opportunity to learn. We did everything back then, from manually adding captions to eating bizarre foods on camera. Every producer was responsible for 6 videos a month, start to finish, everything from conceiving the idea through execution, editing, and delivery. The speed all but assured that nothing we were making was perfect, but it also meant that we had an opportunity to try a million different things, learn constantly, and grow. The job was to understand what makes videos go viral, dissect the elements, test them, make more dope viral videos, rinse and repeat. When we started, we knew each other, but we were on different teams, which were color-coded, blue, yellow, red, and green. The blue team made videos for the yellow channel. They were very confusing times. Keith, myself, was working on a small unscripted pod. Zach was on the comedy scripted team. Eugene was making videos for the BuzzFeed Violet character universe. And Ned was training all the new hires while making science videos. We weren't friends, and we seldom had opportunities to interact. Over the course of a few months, however, what was clear was that we were all talented video producers, and we were among the people we mutually found most fun to watch in videos. And as we would soon find out, we were the only four willing to put all of ourselves on camera.
In September of 2014, we joined forces to produce our first video as a foursome. It was a video just like any other. Another in a long series of tests, except this one required four subjects free of shame and willing to basically get naked in front of coworkers. We were both the producers as well as the only volunteers. Guys Try On Ladies' Underwear for the first time was an instant hit. Over 21 million views and counting. Not that we're counting, but we are. Though the video itself was simple, we all had a blast, and we could see the potential. That 2.5-minute video would change the course of our lives forever. Our story could have ended there. But then an unlikely bombshell hit. We woke up one fine November morning to the release of Kim Kardashian's Paper magazine cover. You know the one. She bared her naked buttocks to the world and broke the internet, wearing nothing save for white gloves and a pearl necklace. Keith burst into the office full of energy and declared that we had to make a video about this, and we had to film it today. We knew this was a moment, one of those rare, explosive internet events that everyone would be talking about. If we busted our asses, because she shows her butt. If we busted our asses, we'd be able to beat everyone and have the first video on it. We opted to stay late. Just 4 guys, 2 bottles of champagne, and a whole lot of baby oil. When people ask when our bond really formed, we can easily point to that night. You get tipsy and oil up your coworker's butt, you become best friends real fast.
It took 18 hours straight to get it done, with all of us staying late to edit and Keith pulling a double shift. By noon the next day, the video was ready to publish. We could feel it. This one was gonna be big. Eugene said out loud to no one in particular that we needed a name, to which Keith replied, I was thinking the same thing, like, what if we called it Try Guys or something? We debated the merits of the Try Guys versus Try Guys for longer than you'd think possible, and landed on the. When in doubt, always choose the article. The video exploded into one of the most viewed videos BuzzFeed had ever released. The Try Guys were officially born. After that, we tried everything we could. We tried drag. We tried nude modeling. We tried hitting professional fastballs. We made a mini-series on K-pop and anime. We made a competition reality show for YouTube Red. We produced big budget branded videos that took us across the country and went dog sledding on a glacier in Alaska. We performed live shows at VidCon with security escorts and spoke at colleges to screaming fans. We were trending worldwide on Facebook and had one video get more than 100 million views. We got recognized on the street, in Disneyland, even in foreign countries. Our videos were featured in an actual museum crediting us with pioneering the genre of try videos. We stopped making 2-minute videos and started making 20-minute episodes. We had somehow rapidly become internet famous and suddenly had fans? A strange feeling for 4 producers with disparate interests. But we loved making videos together, and we were just getting started.
Throughout it all, we started to develop a philosophy. Try new things. Don't be afraid to fail. Learn from experts and be respectful. Experience all the beautiful, wonderful, and insane things this world has to offer. There were many people who helped us along the way, like our wonderful first producer, Katie, secretly the 5th Try Guy. And despite the bureaucracy and politics of a large corporation, together we fought to make content that we personally believed in. We worked to connect people through our videos, to make them smile, to help them learn, and to make the world a more open and accepting place. Ultimately, though, we needed the autonomy of being fully independent to grow as creators. In April 2018, after 4 years and more than 100 videos, the 4 of us put in our letters of resignation. We had tried surviving in the wilderness, a demolition derby, cosplay, and American Ninja Warrior. But it was time to try the scariest, most difficult thing yet. Starting a company of our own.
What's wrong with you? Now that you know enough about us to trust us with your life, let us help you roll up your sleeves. In order to change and improve and grow, you'll need to dismantle your bad habits. And in order to dismantle your bad habits, you need to understand what habits are and how they form in the first place. Thinking about this led us to the writing of Charles Duhigg, author of The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business. You have to read books to write books, baby. According to Duhigg, we think we go around all day choosing how to live our lives, but 40 to 45% of what we think are decisions are actually just habits. There's a trigger, a behavior, and then a reward. And once a behavior turns into a habit, it becomes automatic and moves into the basal ganglia near the center of our skull. The basal ganglia is one of the oldest structures in our brain. Yuck, how awful sounding is basal ganglia? Just knowing that there's a ganglia deep in our basal controlling our caveman brains is haunting. But now you know. It's not your fault you can't resist a snack break at the same time every day. Or that when you come home, you watch 2 hours of TV instead of going to the gym. It's your basal ganglia. Fuck you, basal ganglia. Turns out there's something deep in our brain, a holdover from monkey times, that rewards and entrenches comfortable behaviors, making us slaves to our own habits under the guise of free will. And unfortunately, it's not so simple to change these habits. All of our triggers and routines and habits are jumbled up together. Getting a 3:30 p.m. cookie in the kitchen is as related to hunger as it is to stepping away from the computer. It took Duhigg a few days of observation to realize that what he actually craved every day was socialization. And so he was able to replace his daily cookie break with 10 minutes of water cooler chat. Less delicious, but a more direct satisfaction of his true desires, and a little easier on the hips. So, as you listen to this book, we want you to start thinking about some of the habits you've picked up and how they've made you less vulnerable to new experiences. Do you eat at the same 3 places every day because you fear change? Do you avoid big parties because you get social anxiety or don't remember people's names or drink too much or something else? Do you snooze the alarm 45 times every morning? I do. I do it. These are things you want to break down and flush out of your system with some good old-fashioned failure. Duhigg might recommend careful uncoupling of habits. Instead, we're going to prescribe a shock to the system.
Success is stumbling from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm. Winston fucking Churchill.
Get ready to try! People always ask us, how do we start a new try? Well, it's simple.
take the thing you least want to do and jump right the fuck in. We have an internal motto that the less we want to do something, the better a video it is. We'd extend that to say the less you want to do something, the more important it is for you to try. What's holding you back? What do you think is the worst thing that can happen? Let's challenge that. Don't just do something with the knowledge that you might fail. Jump in and seek out your failure. We want you to confront the worst thing you think could ever happen, realize it's probably not so bad, and then grow from it. We want you to get some things wrong. There's a reason we're called the Try Guys and not the Succeed Bros. First of all, we're not brothers. But more importantly, success should never be your goal. The goal is the experience. Put another way, it's not always about hitting the mark. It's about creating new habits and shaking yourself from the patterns we all trap ourselves in. It's about living and exploring, and it's about not allowing anything, especially yourself, to hold you back. Whether it's bad habits or a lifetime of inertia or a fear of forging a new path, we all at some point face that paralyzing challenge of trying something new. We're here to help you break free. When we're putting together a new try for a video, one thing we like to think about is, what do I want to get out of this? We've found that if we spend some time thinking about why we are about to do something we have no business doing, it makes jumping in just a little bit easier. For instance, sometimes in life we try stuff, say snorkeling, because a friend invites us and we don't want to say no because her parents have a sick beach house. And other times we try stuff, say magic, because we think it's cool and actually want to learn how to do it. Disclaimer, only two of the four Try Guys think magic is cool. Can you guess which ones? Tweet us. See, this audio is interactive. What are you thinking about? What did you eat for lunch today? Tweet me. Also, I'm pretty sure this refers to Magic the Gathering, which me and Keith like. I don't know if it means magic, but I'm pretty sure me and Keith are the ones that think magic is cool regardless. The more personal the reason, the more powerful your drive will ultimately become. Most of the things we'll talk about in this book are changes that accompany deeply intimate life goals. Think about the why and you'll succeed in the try. Final rhyme of the audiobook, I promise. Pretty good one though, right? So, let's do a little exercise. Close your eyes. Well, I mean, unless you're driving, but, you know, if you're like on a bus or you're at your house, close your eyes. Visualize the thing that you're most afraid to try. The thing that you're most insecure about. It could be something physical or emotional. What is it? What would it mean to you to be able to conquer it? Why do you want to do it? Imagine yourself overcoming it. Keep that in mind throughout this audiobook, and at the end, you'll have the tools to go out and face that fear. We also think you should set a goal that's just out of reach and work towards that. If you want to try and start jogging, gross, I know, but if you want to try and start jogging, and you set your goal as only halfway around the block because you know you can actually accomplish that, you're also setting the bar really low for yourself. We say set the bar too high and then strive to reach it. Finally, it helps to remember that everyone is going through the same things you are. We are all faking it! I've literally never read an audiobook before! I've no idea what I'm doing! Is this even working? Are you listening to this while you're driving? Please don't get in an accident! Everyone is terrified in their own way. Also, 99% of the time, no one can tell that you're faking it or terrified. Unless you tell them you're faking it and terrified like I just did. We think everyone is always staring or laughing at us, but the truth is, they're dealing with their own nonsense. Ain't nobody got time for you. In fact, it's pretty self-centered to think anybody has got time for you. Long story short, fake it till you make it, and fail like no one is watching. Don't believe us? We're going to prove it.
Don't fail alone. We jump right into unfamiliar situations. Most of our videos are shot in one day, and we get thrown right to the sharks. Literally. But we do it together. You're not alone. And to prove that, we are going to fail right along with you. Throughout this book, we're going to put our money where our mouth is and show you just how productive and transformative it is to confront failure. The four of us are each going to tackle long-ignored life goals with a bonus shared goal to boot and prove that anyone can get better by just screwing up a little. We're turning our philosophy back on ourselves and confronting our biggest insecurities, and we're doing it for you, but we're also doing it for us. While we will always be there with you in spirit, you should also tell your friends about what makes you uncomfortable and then try that thing together. It's much easier with the support of a team. Think about it. Who are the three people that you could text right now and tell them your goals? Go, text them. We'll wait. Actually, it'll give us a quick pee break. I've been holding it in since chapter one started. Whew. You done? Ah, much better. Look, holding one another accountable will be something we'll talk a lot about in this book. When you know you have a buddy by your side, trying and failing seems so much less daunting. Plus, there's always a photographer for the gram. We sometimes consult experts to give us a little insight before each try. In this book, we'll be talking to CEOs, vegan gurus, personal trainers, and interior designers, all in an effort to learn as much as possible from our failures. Seek out those who are better at things than you are. It sounds like it should be in a fortune cookie, but it's also important advice. And if you can't find an expert, read about what you're going to attempt. At the very least, Google it. Wikipedia? Knowing a bit more about what you have in store is very empowering. Don't do too much research, though, or you'll psych yourself out. Together, we're going to go out of our way to screw up. Only then can the real growth begin. We fail all the time, and you can too. What's the worst that could happen? You get eaten by sharks? Ugh, okay, that's a bad example.
A Brief History of Trying. 12 different publishers rejected Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. 12! Before someone gave J.K. Rowling a shot. Did she give up? No. And now she has $1 billion and one of the best-selling books of all time. Soon to be right behind this one. Reward Failure. A lot of times people tell you to accept failure, but we think you should reward failure. Take the time to give yourself a pat on the back after you fail. Commend yourself for putting yourself out there. Treat yourself, as the kids say. 99% of people in the world didn't try anything new today. So congratulations, you are officially part of the 1%. Make sure you have a good accountant to manage all that newfound wealth. How do you reward failure? The same way you reward success. If you go out for pizza after you win the soccer game, you should go out for pizza when you lose the soccer game. Congratulate yourself on getting out there and competing and doing your best. We're not saying to ignore the failure and pretend like you won. You should talk and think about what your failures were and how you could do better next time. If you punish yourself for failing, though, you're more likely to give up. You are only associating negative feelings with your failure. Growth comes from trying, failing, and trying again. So failure is necessary. Reward it. Yay, pizza! Our greatest glory is not in never failing, but in rising every time we fail. Confucius.
Try again. The rest of this book will divide up every single aspect of life into 5 neatly delineated chapters: health, style, work, love, and family. We're going to talk about important things like dating, fashion, and CrossFit. We're going to do a deep dive into each of our backgrounds with select stories that showcase the rocky journeys that brought us here. It's going